Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Good Tuesday morning. Tensions only mounting in the Middle East this morning.
And spilling over into the streets here at home. It's April 16th. This is Today. Ready to retaliate, Israel vowing to respond after those unprecedented attacks from Iran, stoking fears of a broader war across the Middle East. The White House pressuring Benjamin Netanyahu to show restraint. While here in the U.S., protesters demanding a ceasefire in Gaza, blocking traffic on roads, bridges, and airports. Some passengers forced to abandon their cars and walk. We'll break it all down. Courtroom drama. The historic criminal trial of Donald Trump enters day two after opening with the dismissal of dozens of prospective jurors. Not a single one picked so far. The defendant lashing out at the judge in the case against him and the impact on the 2024 race.
I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina campaigning like I should be.
We'll have the very latest. On the move, the next major storm sweeping across the country, bringing the risk of tornadoes, hail, and heavy rain to millions in the Midwest. Al's full forecast just ahead. Criminal case. FBI agents board that still-trapped cargo ship that brought down Baltimore's Key Bridge, delivering a search warrant as part of the federal investigation into that deadly disaster. This morning, the questions they want answered. All that plus concert ticket turmoil. The government reportedly set to sue Live Nation in the wake of that Taylor Swift presale fiasco.
No, tell me right now this is a joke.
What it could mean the next time you try to see your favorite performers on stage. And hoop dreams fulfilled.
The Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark goes first overall in the most anticipated WNBA draft ever. An exciting night, shining a light on the league's next stars.
Win or lose, like, we're growing the game.
Our front row seat to basketball history on the orange carpet. Today, Tuesday, April 16th, 2024.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb. Live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Good morning. Welcome to Today. So happy that you're joining us on this Tuesday morning. Well, we knew it. She went number one, didn't she?
Was there any doubt there at no all? Doubt. And here she is. She's going to Indiana. She's got the fever, highly anticipated WNBA draft. And boy, what she has already done for the sport.
And by the way, they sold tickets to this event. There were like 1,000 people there. And last year, it wasn't quite the same. So anyway, congrats to Caitlin and the rest. But first, let's get to our top story. Those growing tensions across the Middle East and here in the United States as the world awaits Israel's response to Iran's weekend drone and missile attack.
Here at home, protesters calling for a ceasefire in Gaza disrupted cities nationwide yesterday, shutting down major roads, snarling traffic. But Iran's attack on Israel has renewed urgency on Capitol Hill to increase financial support for Israel. The Speaker of the House unveiling a new plan for a vote on a long-stalled aid package.
NBC's chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel joins us now from Jerusalem. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. Israel's war cabinet is meeting yet again today for the third straight day. But Israeli officials are being very close-lipped about how, when, where, and to what extent Israel will act against Iran.
Israel says it will retaliate to Iran's unprecedented and unsuccessful missile and drone attack. While touring a base that was lightly damaged, the chief of staff of the Israeli army gave no hints.
Iran will face the consequences for its actions.
Four U.S. officials tell NBC News they expect Israel's response to be limited in scope and most likely involve strikes against Iranian forces and Iranian-backed proxies outside of Iran. Iran controls well-armed militias in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. Striking them would not be seen as provocative as hitting Iran directly, but could also trigger a violent response, especially in Lebanon, home to Hezbollah, the world's most powerful non-state military. But as of now, it's all a guessing game. U.S. officials stress they have not been briefed on Israel's final decision, which may change. Last night, Iran's foreign minister saying its response to future action from Israel will be, quote, immediate and severe. Israel and Iran have fought a shadow war for decades, which burst into the open earlier this month when Israel bombed the Iranian consulate in Damascus, killing senior Iranian military officials. The Emir of Qatar, working to broker a ceasefire in Gaza, overnight called it all a distraction from the war in Gaza, where many of the 2.3 million people, according to aid agencies, are on the brink of starvation. In multiple American cities yesterday, pro-Palestinian protesters took to the streets, blocking traffic from the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco to Seattle, Chicago's O'Hare Airport, and New York, to demand a ceasefire.
Richard, earlier you outlined what the potential response from Israel may look like. Do you think that would be enough to avoid a wider war?
It is always a gamble, and it is very hard to know, because what Israel does and Israel's calculations are very likely not the same as Iran's calculations. And some possible ideas that are being floated in the Israeli media, again, the Israeli military is not making its plans public in any way, but there's talk that maybe Israel could strike proxies outside the country, even use a cyber attack, or carry out attacks against military facilities, particularly drone factories, while avoiding civilian casualties in Iran.
All right. Richard Engel for us there in Jerusalem. Richard, thank you.
We turn now to Donald Trump's criminal trial here in New York City. Jury selection is moving forward. The judge dismissed nearly half the prospective jurors on day one. The former president is facing 34 felony counts stemming from an alleged cover-up of a hush money payment to an adult film star in the weeks before the 2016 election. NBC's senior legal correspondent Laura Jarrett has the latest. Laura, good morning.
Hey, Savannah, good morning. It was a surreal moment Donald Trump had fought to avoid. A former American president confined to a no-frills courtroom, getting a preview of some of the most salacious evidence prosecutors plan to offer at this trial, and a first glimpse at some of the lives of the everyday New Yorkers who will soon sit in judgment of him.
This morning, the heavy lift of selecting a jury to hear what's likely to become one of the most high-profile cases in history labors on. Donald Trump seated in a Manhattan courtroom, coming face-to-face for the first time with some of the men and women who could ultimately determine his fate. The former president is accused of falsifying his internal business records in order to bury evidence he had an adult film actress paid off just days before the 2016 election, an allegation he denies.
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
200 New Yorkers summoned for jury duty, slowly questioned in batches on day one of trial, many raising hands to signal they could not be fair. Those were quickly dismissed. One woman overheard walking out of court saying, "I just couldn't do it." Prospective jurors only hearing a brief outline of the 34 felony counts Mr. Trump faces as the judge ticked through a who's who of names from Trump world that could come up or serve as potential witnesses. The solemn, painstaking vetting process inside the courtroom, a contrast to what's been happening outside, with the presumptive GOP nominee railing against the timing of the state's case.
I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina campaigning like I should be. It's perfect for the radical left Democrats.
The judge publicly warning Mr. Trump his attendance at trial now mandatory. And if he doesn't show up, a warrant will be issued for his arrest, but was noncommittal about granting Mr. Trump a day off next month to attend his son's high school graduation. At the same time, some evidentiary wins for the former president's team heading into trial, including the judge barring prosecutors from playing the infamous Access Hollywood tape for the jury, though they can reference what he said.
So, Laura, you were there. There's an overflow courtroom.
Yes.
So reporters that are covering it who can't be in the courtroom can see and witness what's happening inside the courtroom. What did you see?
Right. We couldn't be in the courtroom yesterday because it's packed with prospective jurors. Eventually, we'll get in there. But yesterday, we can see the former president on a big jumbo screen. We can see his eyes. There's all this debate about whether he was sleeping or not. We can see his eyes are closed for long stretches. Do we know he's sleeping for sure? No. But there are other moments he's intently looking at the evidence. He's engaged. engaged. He's following along with the questionnaire that the jurors are talking about in court. So it's sort of a mixed bag in terms of what his disposition was like there. But we could not see the actual jurors. We could only hear their voices.
And we have a few more days, maybe a week or two more of jury selection.
And you can see why it's taking so long, because so many people are saying, I just can't do it.
Yeah. All right, Laura, thank you very much.
All right. Also this morning, millions of Americans are once again in the path of severe weather, the potential for tornadoes, flooding, rain, high winds. Al's very busy tracking it all morning now.
Hey, good morning, guys. And we are looking already at severe weather firing up. We got tornado watches from Nebraska all the way down to Iowa. And we're looking at even some tornado warnings right now in parts of Kansas. So we're watching this very closely. This is part of a big developing storm that's rapidly intensifying in strength. And as it moves out this morning, we're looking at those strong storms moving into the Midwest, isolated flash flood potential. We're also looking today and tonight, 25 million people at risk for wind gusts of up to 60 miles per hour, damaging hail and tornadoes, especially in this hatched area, EF2 or more from Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, on into Quincy. This moves tomorrow to the east into the Ohio River Valley with rain arriving on the East Coast by later tomorrow. In fact, 19 million people at risk from Detroit, Cleveland, Louisville, Indianapolis, Columbus. Heaviest rain is going to be in the upper Ohio and Mississippi River valleys and on up right through the northern plains. Hourly rates, 1 to 2 inches per hour. Guys?
All right, Al, we'll check back. Thank you so much. We turn now to new developments tied to the collapse of Baltimore's Key Bridge. The FBI has now joined the investigation into last month's disaster. And just yesterday, a fourth victim was recovered from the wreckage. NBC's Tom Costello joins us with the latest. Tom, good morning.
Hi, Savannah. This, we are told, is a criminal investigation looking into what the crew knew before the crash. Was there any evidence that the ship might lose power and become uncontrollable while still in Baltimore waters? It comes as the owner-operators of the ship are invoking a pre-Civil War law to limit their liabilities. Photos from the Washington Post capturing FBI agents climbing up the side of the massive container ship Dolly, executing a search warrant. The ship still trapped in the wreckage of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, a month after the ship crashed into the bridge at 1:30 a.m. Late Monday, word that a fourth body has been recovered. Law enforcement sources tell NBC News the FBI is focused on whether any member of the crew had prior knowledge of the ship's mechanical problems that would make it unsafe. Maritime law attorney James Power.
You understand a crew's still aboard, so they'll interview the crew. They'll probably, I would assume, coordinate with the notes of the Coast Guard and the NTSB for any investigations.
The NTSB tells NBC News its investigators are looking into reports that alarms were going off on the ship while it was still in port, suggesting a potential power problem before the ship left port.
They needed the assistance of Hyundai, who is the manufacturer of equipment in the engine room, to download data from the electrical power system and look at the circuit breakers.
Attorneys for two of the bridge repair workers who died and one survivor say the men were sitting in their cars on a break when they were suddenly thrown into the water below without warning. Two remain missing.
Baltimore has temporarily lost a bridge. But six families have permanently lost irreplaceable loved ones.
The mayor of Baltimore now promising legal action against the ship's owner, the manufacturer, and operator. But the owner and manager have already invoked a law dating back to 1851 that limits their liability only to the value of the damaged ship, not the victims' families or the destroyed bridge.
This law was used to protect the owner of the Titanic. That's how ridiculous this is.
Now, there is an exception to that 173-year-old law. If the owner knew the ship had problems before it left port, so that makes this FBI investigation very important. All companies involved have declined to comment. And by the way, we're now learning that Julio Cervantes, who survived falling off the bridge in his truck into that freezing water, he doesn't swim. He said he rolled down the windows, climbed out, and then clung to a piece of metal until he was rescued. Thankfully, his car didn't have electric windows. Savannah?
Incredible. Tom, thank you very much for the update.
We have a lot more to get to, including a headline-making story for anybody who has concert on their summer agenda. The Justice Department reportedly preparing to file an antitrust lawsuit against ticket giant Live Nation. Let's bring in NBC senior business correspondent Christine Romans. Hey, Christine, good morning.
Good morning to you. You know, you've heard these complaints about high ticket prices and, of course, that famous Taylor Swift's Eras Tour ticket debacle. Remember, the government has been looking into this for years, and now it may be ready to take the next step against Live Nation.
It's been a major year for high-profile concerts and high-profile ticketing meltdowns.
I just really wanted to see Taylor.
And this morning, the government reportedly preparing to sue Live Nation, one of the country's biggest concert and promotion companies. The Wall Street Journal reporting, according to people familiar with the matter, that the Justice Department is set to file an antitrust lawsuit alleging Live Nation, Ticketmaster's parent company, has undermined competition for ticketing live events. The DOJ finding in 2019 that Live Nation was pressuring venues to use Ticketmaster. Scrutiny increased after Ticketmaster very publicly crashed during a presale for Taylor Swift's Eras Tour, leaving fans devastated.
I'm not getting tickets.
The United States Senate grilling company executives last year.
May I suggest respectfully that Ticketmaster ought to look in the mirror and say, I'm the problem. It's me.
Live Nation responding at the time.
We apologize to the fans. We apologize to Ms. Swift. We need to do better.
This morning, declining to comment. But the Ticketmaster CEO defending itself against the investigation last month, writing that economic conditions lead to high ticket prices, adding promoters don't set prices, artists do. Fans focused on those prices as several massive tours set to take stage again this year.
Now, NBC News reached out to the Department of Justice, but they have not declined to comment.
Christine, put this in perspective. So how big of a deal is this for Live Nation?
You know, this is a two-year investigation, right? And this is the government. This is the Department of Justice saying that, is this a monopoly? Is this too big and has too much power? So that will be, if the government files suit, that will be what this will explore. So it is a big challenge, for, certainly for Live Nation.
All right. Thank you, Christine.
We'll keep an eye on it. We'll switch gears and get back to Al and his national maps.
That's right. We're looking at a beautiful day here in the Northeast. Temperature is going to be again into the 70s. We're looking at record highs throughout the lower Mississippi and Ohio River Valley. Severe storms, though, as you get into the upper Mississippi River Valley. Got a fire risk out through western Texas. Plenty of sunshine along the West Coast. Few showers and snow showers through the western plains. And that is your latest weather, guys.
All right, Al. Thank you so much. Still ahead, convicted murderer Scott Peterson back in the spotlight and back in court today. NBC's Liz Kreutz is following that case. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Hoda. Good morning to you. Remember, Scott Peterson is now has the backing of the Los Angeles Innocence Project. So we're going to look at why he's arguing he didn't get a fair trial two decades ago and what to expect as his lawyers argue for new DNA testing.
All right, Liz, we'll see you in a minute. Plus, nearly half of all Americans use travel rewards credit cards. Are you really getting the perks you promised? Why they are now at the center of a federal hearing and what you need to know before you sign up. But first, on a what is today? Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday morning. Tuesday. This is Today on NBC.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Alpha One Niner, commence Wi-Fi device checklist.
Laptops on. TVs streaming. Game console consoling. Smart thermostat set for cuddle time. Doorbell camera. Oh, my package is here.
Fast, reliable, able to power tons of devices inside your home at once.
All systems go, you are clear for takeoff.
This is Xfinity Internet, Wi-Fi built to wow. And watch the short film, The Aviators, now playing at Xfinity.com. Restrictions apply. Actual speeds vary and are not guaranteed.
We're back, 7:30. Feels very Greek, doesn't it? Yes, the road to the Paris Olympics, the Olympic flame lit overnight. A spectacular ceremony. Yes, it is Greece. Some 10,000 torchbearers will carry, of course, the flame over the next 3 months as it makes its way to Paris.
It's happening, you guys. Chanel joins the table. And good morning. Good to see you.
actually tomorrow marks 100 days to go until we do go to Paris. We're going to celebrate. We're going to have a huge party on the plaza. You do not want
to. Will there be rosé?
You know there always is
for you. All right. Well, first up in this half hour, new developments in the decades-old Scott Peterson case. The convicted murderer who maintains he was wrongfully convicted in the killings of his wife and unborn child expected at a key court hearing today. NBC's Liz Kreutz joins us from Los Angeles with the latest on this. Liz, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Yeah, this will be the second court appearance for Scott Peterson since he began working with the L.A. Innocence Project. His new lawyers say investigators at the time never tested evidence that could some or could show someone else was responsible for the murders. The hearing today will be about whether to seal some evidence and names of witnesses who Peterson's lawyers say fear retaliation for speaking out.
Convicted killer Scott Peterson set to appear back in court virtually today as he continues his latest quest for a new trial, now with the help of the Los Angeles Innocence Project.
I see Mr. Peterson trying to unmute.
Peterson, now 51, last seen at a hearing a month ago, zooming in from prison, sporting long hair pulled back in a ponytail.
Thank you.
His new attorney argued for the release of evidence she says should have been made available at the time of the trial.
Mr. Peterson has been waiting 20 years to find some of these police reports and audio recordings and video recordings that should have been provided.
Peterson is serving a life sentence without parole for the 2002 murders of his pregnant wife, Lacey, and their unborn child. Police say Peterson dumped their bodies from his fishing boat into the San Francisco Bay on Christmas Eve, where months later their bodies washed up. But the LA Innocence Project says there's overlooked evidence suggesting they may have been killed by burglars who broke into the home across the street from the Petersons. The LA Innocence Project is also pointing to a burned-out orange van containing a bloody mattress said to have been found in Modesto the morning after Lacey disappeared. They want to do testing on a sample of that mattress that's believed to be in police custody to determine if there's any of Lacey's DNA. Former Modesto police detective John Bueller, who was one of the lead investigators on the original case, says he never knew about the van at the time.
Do you think there's a possibility that it is connected to this case?
I guess there's a possibility, but I think it's kind of like the possibility of the sun rising in the west tomorrow. I just really don't think it's there.
Criminal defense attorney Paula Canny has been following the case for years and believes Peterson didn't get a fair trial.
I know he didn't get a fair trial because a fair trial would have been that all of the information would have been provided to the defense.
Now, the district attorney has not responded to any of these new claims, but the prosecution says there is overwhelming circumstantial evidence against Peterson, including lying about his mistress and that the bodies were found at the same place he had gone fishing alone. Today, Peterson's family will be there in court to support him, all this setting the stage for a critical hearing next month where his attorneys will make the case for getting that DNA testing. Guys.
All right, Liz, thank you. I want to turn to NBC News legal analyst Danny Savalos. Hi, Danny. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the first step in a long road and a very, very high bar for the defense team to overcome to get a new trial. What do you think the significance is of today?
Well, today is really just about sealing the record. And what the defense wants to do is go and reach out to all these witnesses. But just like the prosecutors do in grand jury proceedings, they want to protect these witnesses because I have no doubt some of these potential witnesses are like, I don't want my name out there in the news. I don't want anything to do with this. You got to protect me. So the problem is that court records are presumed to be public and open. So this is not going to be a walk in the park. They're going to have to make a showing that there's some substantial interest and a really good reason to seal these records and keep the identities of these witnesses private. And if they don't achieve that today, you might see some of the people that they want to bring into court back out because they just don't want any part of this.
Some people might be thinking there must be some there because the LA Innocence Project is saying there might be something there. They're looking for this DNA evidence. So is there something there with the LA Innocence Project?
Well,
you think?
This isn't the original Innocence Project, the Barry Scheck Innocence Project that was made famous. You know, Barry Scheck was a famous O.J. Simpson attorney, which is a timely reference given news of recent. But look, at the same time, these are organizations that do get thousands upon thousands of prisoner letters. I get a lot of prisoner letters. Mm-hmm. So they have their choice to pick up the favorite, the one that they think has the best chance. So there is some significance there. But at the same time, they have a very high bar here. Overturning a conviction is really, really difficult. It's not enough to just sort of raise some new questions mm-hmm. that may have been raised at trial itself. But, I mean, they've raised some things that really have people all across the country saying, boy, I'm second guessing this mm-hmm. now, even though in all likelihood, probably they may have gotten the right guy at the original trial.
Okay. All right. It'll be interesting to keep watching these. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny. Still ahead, an eye-opening new report out just this morning on kids and social media, the dangers and impact it's revealing that every parent needs to hear.
But first, those popular travel rewards programs that millions of Americans rely on are under new scrutiny this morning. Christine Romans has that story.
Good morning. Millions of us have these mileage rewards credit cards. You probably do, ladies. But are you getting all the perks? And what are the hidden costs? We've got that right after the break.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Join me, Esther Perel, every Monday in my office on Where Should We Begin? I'm talking to couples and individuals about love and work, about turning conflict into connection. More than ever, our relationships define the quality of our lives. So let's explore the myriad of relational challenges together. See you Monday.
Our business expense allots $40 each for dinner. I plan on grabbing as many miles as I can.
Okay. You got to fill me in on the miles thing. What is that about? Are you talking about frequent flyer miles?
You really want to know?
I'm dying to know.
I don't spend a nickel if I can help it unless it somehow profits my mileage account.
So what are you saving up for? Hawaii? South of France?
It's not like that. The miles are the goal.
That's fine. Remember that up in the air. Oh, what a great movie. And no offense to Mr. Clooney, but for a lot of Americans, the rewards are the point. They don't want just the miles.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Well, and programs are very popular. According to one estimate, 41% of us have a travel rewards credit card. And now the government has called a hearing to see if you're really getting all of the perks you promised when you sign up.
Our senior business correspondent, Christine Romans, is back again with a closer look. So this has gone to the level of the government looking into it. What's going on?
They want to have a hearing. Well, look, that last year they found a case of a bank that was promising rewards perks and not delivering when you signed up for this rewards credit card. And so the government wants to make sure you are getting all of the rewards that you're signing up for. And it's not just a bait and switch. Mm-hmm. And these are really popular. Millions of us have these cards. And I think a lot of people don't follow through to make sure you're getting every single little dollar and point that's out there.
I was just about to say, so for the people watching this morning, including myself, we have them. What should you know?
You know, you should know that it's up to you to follow through, make sure you're checking the balances, make sure if they promise a bunch of points at the beginning that you get those points. Don't leave points on the table. Some people have the average points card has 55,000 miles or points on it. And I think people sometimes forget that's really valuable. And really watch when you're signing up. Look for the best deal when you're signing up. Some of these sign-up bonuses for these cards can be, you know, the equivalent of miles that are worth like $1,000. So really shop around there.
Yeah. I mean, so if you are looking, how can you price them out or compare and contrast?
Yeah, well, you want to really be careful about a couple of things. Some of the big banks have very high annual fees. So if you're getting a bunch of points on the front side and then you're paying $500 for the best diner's card, you know, that doesn't really help. Watch the interest rate. Again, the big banks, many of the 15 big banks have 30% interest rate. So if you sign up for the points and then you carry a little bit of a balance, you just lost all the benefit of that because you're paying so much in interest. And again, with interest rates so high, I say this all the
time. Look at my face. If you can't pay it off at the end of the month, please don't buy it and don't open up a new credit card if you think you're just going for the points, but you can't carry the balance.
So if you wanted to choose the best travel credit card, in your opinion, or one that you like, which are the top ones?
So I really argue a lot with some of my personal finance friends about this. I really like the miles, and I like the fact that I get the miles. I have a family of five. I use those miles to pay off a ticket when we're all going someplace, and it helps the budget. Other people, though, really point to the cash back. If you are spending a lot, sometimes the cash back is the best deal. So I say you have to do the homework for yourself. Mm-hmm. There's not really a one-size-fits-all of the best card for you. You really do.
What happens at these personal finance parties you go to? You guys just go around and compare and contrast rewards?
We don't spend any money. We do save money.
Thank you. All right. Let's get a check of the forecast. What's up?
I'm all for the miles. I like that. That's the deal right there. All right. I'm all for some warm temperatures, too. Through late week, we've got warm tropical air surging north between high pressure out over the ocean, low pressure over the plains. It's pumping up this warm air. Look at these temperatures today. Pittsburgh, 75 degrees. New York City, 71. Charlotte, 88. St. Louis, 14 degrees above average at 81 degrees. Look at the next 3 days. Memphis, you're going to be in the mid-80s. We cool bet down a bit on Friday. Jacksonville by 90 on Friday, 84 in Raleigh, upper 80s in Houston. Cold front, though, is going to push after these temperatures get anywhere from 1 to 20 degrees above average. Cold front pushes through from Canada over the weekend. That's going to drive temperatures down a bit. Kansas City, you're at 58 by Saturday, but you warm up to 68 on Monday. Pittsburgh, 62. Little Rock will be see temperatures cool down into the mid-60s, but then warm up to near 70 degrees. And that's your latest weather, guys.
All right. Thank you. Coming up next, an inside look at a very special night for the future stars of the WNBA, including Caitlin Clark. Our Stephanie Gott scored a coveted ticket to the draft. Good morning.
Hey, guys. It was really fun. You know, I spoke to the WNBA commissioner, and one of the things that she said to me is they're going to try to harness all of that energy at the end of the college season this year and bring it into the WNBA. And if last night is any indication, that's exactly what they're doing. I'll have all the details coming
up. Can't wait, Steph. Looking forward to it. That and your morning boost coming up right after this. We're back with Carson. A big, big night in sports.
It was, guys. After all the excitement of March Madness, all eyes last night on the WNBA and the draft as Caitlin Clark, as expected, was selected first overall. And our own Stephanie Goss, busy in Brooklyn last night. Steph, how was it?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, guys. It was great to be there. Good morning. And the WNBA draft was the hottest ticket in town last night. 1,000 fans snapped up all of the seats in just 15 minutes. Last year was the most watched WNBA regular season in 21 years. And it looks like with this class of super rookies, the sky is the limit.
It was a surprise to no one that college superstar Caitlin Clark was at the very top of the new WNBA class.
I'm just excited to get here and get it started.
The former Iowa standout guard, known for her stellar three-point shooting, says she's ready for the next chapter of her career with the Indiana Fever.
I'm 22 years old, and this is something new to me. This is a new challenge, and that's something I'm excited for.
At number two, Stanford shot blocker Cameron Brink is joining the LA Sparks. And rounding out the top three, the Chicago Sky selecting Camilla Cardoso. The 6'7" center helped South Carolina win this year's national championship. 2024's star-studded WNBA draft class is already pushing women's basketball to new heights, even before they reach the pros.
Win or lose, like, we're growing the game.
Playing in environments where you're having sold-out arenas, I mean, I think it's honestly unbelievable.
I'm surrounded by a bunch of powerful young women, and, you know, it's just great to be a part of this group.
Caitlin Clark helped drive this year's record-breaking college attendance and viewership,
including a historic 18.9 million people tuning into the national championship game.
The league's commissioner hoping to keep that momentum going.
Kathy, it's about time.
Yes, it's about time. This is what I've been waiting for. And women's sports too long has been undercovered, undervalued, and this is our moment.
Ahead of Monday night's celebration in New York City, the WNBA's future rookies visited the Empire State Building. Former LSU star and Chicago Sky draft pick Angel Reese posting this selfie, writing, "Whole lot of buckets." Outside the draft,
I bought tickets for the first time ever.
The excitement for the upcoming season, undeniable.
I'm happy to be here to support women.
According to SportTrack, Caitlin Clark will sign a four-year contract with the Fever worth $338,000, starting with about $76,000 for her first year in the league. She gets a lot of money from endorsements as well, guys, but that is not a very high salary. Yeah.
When I saw the number, 76,000 in the first year and 78,000 in the second year and 85,000 in the third year, I mean, for somebody who is now the face of women's basketball, it seemed kind of ridiculous. A guy who is in the NBA first year, they can get 10 million. And I get it. Wow. There are ticket sales and the math and all that stuff. But there's just something about this that is so disturbing. I picture all the little girls with signs that say Caitlin, and then they're like, but this is what her contract is worth.
So what will change that? You know what changes that?
What?
The money and the interest driving the money. So the media deals and the corporate deals. And a good indication of how that interest works, ESPN has 40 national broadcasts. 36 of them will be the Indiana Fever this year.
Wow. So, and then also they're locked in right now to a previous
negotiation.
Yes. They get to renegotiate next year, the WNBA.
The end of 25, they'll be able to renegotiate.
Will she renegotiate this four-year deal, or is that stuck?
I'm unclear on that, okay. But there will be, and as those media deals change, you see a lot more people watching these
and
games.
And by the way, they're selling out stadiums already. They've already sold out half of those games.
One of the best things that I learned is some of the opponents, some of the other WNBA teams, have actually changed their venues for the Indiana Fever when they come into town to bigger places to accommodate the extra demand.
I should say, we have Angel Reese live coming up in the third.
Oh, I want to hear from her.
Hopefully their day is, I mean, the day is here, but hopefully the payday is coming too.
Yes.
All right, rant over.
Yes.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.